Listen up, Take 12 fans. It's Brett here to explain a few things about the feed. You might have noticed that this episode is called Dubbed Up, and that's because it's the guys from Dubbed Up and their podcast, Noah and Izzo. They are joining the Nice Guy Digital family as we are expanding, and they're joining the feed. So sit back, relax, give them a listen, especially if you're a Husky fan like I am. Lofa and I have been big fans of these guys for a while. They do their thing. They do it well. They crush it on YouTube. They crush it on Discord. So if you're looking for videos of their podcast, check them out over there. But for now, just sit back, relax, and enjoy them here on the Take 12 feed.
First off, we're back, boys. What a...
We're fully back.
When he gets rolling, man, I mean, he is hot. He doesn't miss. And that's kind of what I want to see with him is pre-snap reads and just being efficient. And he'll be a tough stop.
There's probably only a handful of guys who you could trust across the country to step in year one, be a leader, get dialed in, focus like a madman in the film room, and then operate that the very next season with 4 months to go.
One example of it, Colorado brings a backer, which causes his guard to come off right now. It would be normally a double team, and he starts up inside. And it's a nice play for a nice hole.
We're going to be looking at the offense on this podcast. We'll be setting up another one for defense later next week. But we might not have a lot of starters back, but there's a lot of experience coming into this offense of Jed Fish's. And if you watched any of the Arizona film, this offense is very dynamic and explosive and makes great plays. And I think we're going to see a lot of that. Now, Izzo, as you're looking at this offense and you're seeing the experiences coming back, who are the players that really are popping out to you?
Yeah, I think it starts with your signal caller, right? It's a perfect scenario. And Noah and I talked about this, and we'll go into this more in the podcast. We talked about this offline. You know, the way that, and you'll see this in the videos that we show and things like that, but the way that the scheme lines up is getting the ball out quick, misdirection, making sure timing is dialed in on throws. Let's not mince words. The biggest question mark around this offense is on the offensive line. It's not at running back. We have two top tier running backs in the conference. We have studs at receiver. It's the offensive line. And so he has to be dialed in. He has to be a leader with everything that he does, from timing. It's not just being like, we view Will Rogers as the guy for us. It has to be executing and making sure guys are where they need to be on time, expecting the ball when they need to be, all of that stuff. So I think it starts with him. And the thing that Noah and I talked about offline was, Will Rogers was massively successful in an offense under Mike Leach where they got the ball out quick, timing. Yes, they ran five receiver sets with no running back, right? And they abandoned the running game almost entirely as an offense. But he has to get the ball out quick because they have to drop schemes that basically account for running plays. 3-yard passes, 4-yard passes, where that's where you're getting to keep the chains moving. Yeah. And that's what this offense feels like. We have much more to lean on with the running game, but there's an aspect of the short pass, gadget plays with Kyle Jackson, things like that, that are going to be key. And that starts with your quarterback. And so 100%. all eyes on being able to operate pre-snap motion, mixing up tempo, going from a slow offense to all of a sudden you complete a couple passes and then you got to speed up to keep the defense on their toes, keep substitutions from happening. So all that type of thing is going to be really leaned upon this year. And that's how you're going to get to scoring 30 points a game. And that's what I see coming from Will Rogers.
And yeah, you know, and that's a big number. You said they actually averaged 34.3 points last season. Now, Noah, when we're looking at this offense and we want to get to that 34 points a game, because if we can do that, I think we're going to be very successful as an offense. How do you see that playing out? Like us getting to that 34 points? If you were going to say this is what the UW offense needs to do, and maybe dial it to a specific as opposed to just a generalization.
Yep. So The big thing that I like is, you know, when you talk about a team like UW with, you know, maybe a younger offensive line or maybe not a ton of experience on the offensive line, one of the things is having a quarterback like Izzo was talking about that can do the pre-snap reads, that can get the ball out quick. And one of the things, you know, going back to Arizona, we looked at and kind of the Jed Fish offense that he calls, him and Brennan Carroll, when they wanted to move the chains last year, they were a 65-35 split pass to run. So they wanted to move the chains with the pass. The nice thing about UW and the two-headed monster we have, you know, you'll be able to see a little bit maybe more balance, you know, at the University of Washington in 2024. But the idea that they have that signal caller that has the ability to do that, I think, is keen. And last thing I want to say is when you're looking at a balance from this style is we are really like a pro-style offense. One tight end set, you would see a lot more, you know, in the DeBoer era, we ran a lot of two tight end sets with Westover and Culp. And you'll still see that with Quentin Moore and Latu. The thing is, you know, you might see Moore hang back more in a pass protection and put Latu out into, you know, any sort of offensive passing tree. So, but that's the thing I really wanted to highlight is you'll see a more balanced pro style approach with this offense and you know, this year with UW.
You know, and before we get into the positions, Izzo, when we're talking about moving to this single tight, more pro style, but still they still spread it out some as well. What are your overall thoughts when you're looking at that? Like, especially when we're talking about, you know, you brought up Will Rogers. And I remember, you know, in Kalen DeBoer's offense, Penix was big on the pre-snap reads. Like, remember, he would move the offense around, get an idea of what was happening. How do you see Will Rogers playing out? Do you see it being similar or different than under Jed Fish as it was with Kalen DeBoer?
I think there was a lot of we ran so much pre-snap motion last year that it was almost just like expected that you, as a defense, you were not going to have an idea on any given play, you know, what routes were being run on your defense. You just kind of have to guess, and Mike would hit guys in timing. And so I think where the difference is in terms of pre-snap motion is that we'll probably run it with a little bit more intention. Like, it's not we're running motion, pre-snap motion on every single play. It's that we might be running it 40% of the time. And at the beginning of the game, it's really to set up fake pre-snap motion stuff in the second half.
I see.
Like, you run the exact same look, pre-snap motion, you do the same motion, but it's an entirely different play. And so the defenses are expecting, you know, one thing because they saw it earlier in the game, and then it's totally something different.
I like what you said, where it's going to come with intent.
Yep.
Now, as we dive into this, you know, part of the pre-snap motions and what's big about it is what it does for the quarterback. So let's look at the quarterbacks. And we know Will Rogers is going to be the starter. Damon Williams has really impressed. I went to about six of the practices in the spring, and man, just his ability kind of got some Russell Wilson, young Russell Wilson in him. Noah, with Will Rogers being our QB1, what have you seen from the reps that you've been able to see? But what have you seen from Will Rogers that leads you to be confident in that he'll be able to run this offense this season?
Yeah, you know, what I saw in spring, then at the spring game, and then videos I've kind of seen from practice, I think he's been the solidified number one since the spring game. And that's nothing against Damon Williams either. I think you see a young kid there who is going to be a human highlight reel on Montlake for many years to come. I just think he has another full year to kind of garner the knowledge, the understanding of playing at this speed, this D1 football, like what Izzo's talking about, the pre-snap reads. You know, I think the only thing with him is he might take off a little bit too early sometimes. I think the coaches want to see him sit back, you know, hey, trust your eyes, trust what you're seeing in front of you and make that play. But when it comes to Will Rogers, man, you know, there's a couple of questions I have. Like, you know, Will Rogers' best year under Mike Leach was 2022. He had 3,700 plus yards. I wonder under Fish and this pro style offense, and in my opinion, probably better weapons than he ever had at Mississippi State. You know, can he break 4,000 this year? Because if he can get us to like that 4,000 yard, you know, yard marker, man, look out. Cause I really think we could be around that 33, 34, 35 points per game. And then, you know, he is coming in as the leading passer. And remember, I say that with this. He's the leading passer ever in SEC history. What is SEC really known for? Their elite defenses. So us moving to the Big Ten, you know, smash mouth football. What do? You know, they like to show you all, you know, you have your Penn States, you have your Iowas, your Michigans, your Ohio States, all these, you know, elite defenses. But one thing is with Will is having a leader that's seen elite defenses his whole career. I think that's something that is just a bona fide plus for UW, you know, having that as your signal caller. The other thing is for him is efficiency. Efficiency is going to be key for Will. If you go back and watch his film, you know, I like to say, man, he's streaky, but streaky in a good way. He's kind of like the Ray Allen, you know, of college football. Like when he gets hot, man, that dude absolutely can sling it and he doesn't miss. And so, you know, like I talked about, he had 630 attempts in the year that he had his 3,700 plus yards. So for context, Penix had 555 attempts last year and he had 11 picks. Okay. During Will Rogers' top year, he only had 8 picks. Mm-hmm. So when he gets rolling, man, I mean, he is hot. He doesn't miss. And that's kind of what I want to see with him is pre-snap reads and just being efficient. And he'll be a tough stop.
I think you're right. I know I have if you see a couple of these drives that he had in the mock game, when he started getting hot, he started hitting everyone all over the field and it really stood out. Now, Izzo, same question with you is when you're looking at Will Rogers, what do you want to see from him here in year one? Like what is going to be, I mean, you don't have to say exact numbers, but what do you think he has to do that's going to end up making this offense successful and getting to that 34 points plus a game?
This is such a cop out, but I don't care. he's got to stay healthy. Like that's objective number one, especially behind this offensive line. If there are some defensive linemen in this conference that are going to be looking to take that dude's head off. And thinking that they're going to be coming into this game, circling it as like, hey, this is like a show me game. Like I can show out during this game against this offensive lineman, because people aren't going to be doing the research that they need to be doing ahead of assessing that. But what I think is interesting and I think is going to play toward Will Rogers getting to the goals that Mike, you know, that Noah is talking about here is we don't really run like an elementary play, at least from the plays that I've seen on tape. You don't really see us do just like, oh, I know exactly what that is. As soon as the play gets drawn up, and that these routes are elementary, and we're just running it to go through the motions to see if a guy gets open. Like Noah had said at the end there, like pre-snap reads, it'll be interesting to see if Will Rogers is able to quickly identify early on in the season plays that he needs to scheme out of or get like audible. He needs to audible out at the line and he does so. And then the play that they audible into is not an elementary play. Mm. Mm. Because it seems like every time you watch receivers go out for on routes, that it is like a confusing thing to deal with as a defense. And so I'm wondering if, not every play when you step to the line is going to be a surprise. And I'm wondering if Will Rogers is going to be able to step to the line and then assess that this is not the right play he should be in. And then they pivot to another play and it's something creative. Hmm. And I know that's a deep cut. I'm aware that's a deep cut. But I think if he's able to do that well and you see that early on, it'll be a really big sign for the rest of the year. Like, dude, we might have something here.
Yeah,
like, and seriously on offense.
And if somebody's going to be able to do it, a veteran like him is going to be able to.
Yeah.
You know, he's got that time under his belt, which the other quarterback on the roster actually doesn't have. Now, let's get into Damon Williams a little bit, because I'll be honest, during the spring, I thought Damon Williams looked like he could challenge for the number one spot. He looked that good in the practices. When it came to the spring game, he struggled a little bit, but still flashed. What do you like? I'll start with you, Izzo, on this one. What do you think? Do you think Damon Williams is going to play a some this year? Do you think he'll play a little bit? Do you think it won't play at all? How do you see that playing? And also, answer me this: if you were to see Will Rogers go down, Could Damon Williams lead this team?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think, like, God forbid, if that were to be something that happens early on, like, Jed Fish was on with Tony Castricone yesterday, you know, that being Monday,
great interview.
It's Tuesday. It definitely doesn't seem like he wants him to see the field much this year, based on just if you're reading through the tea leaves of what a coach is saying during an interview. So for that reason, I feel like what Jed had said was that he's very confident. If you talk to the player, Damon Williams, he's maybe even overly confident to a degree, is almost like what it sounded like he was saying. So based on that, I think Damon has the confidence to step in and play. Do I think he's going to do, you know, not throw picks? I think he will throw picks if he's called upon to step in there. So I will say that I do think he's going to move the football, though. If you've been to a practice or if you've been to the spring game just as a fan, dude, he is totally something different. Like, I don't want to say Lamar Jackson, because that is just on a different level, but he's closer to that than whatever scrambling quarterback you have.
Dude, he's lightning in a bottle, man. He is.
He's the best running quarterback I've seen at the University of Washington since Isaiah Stanback.
Ooh.
And yeah, it's like that. So he'll be able to go out and create. And if a play breaks down, his first read doesn't go well, he'll be able to escape out and he's going to get you some yards for sure. So it's not the end of the world if he has to come in and play, but it's not going to be picture perfect. Now, do I think he will play if Will does not have, God forbid, an injury? I probably not, unless it's in garbage time. I think you could see him, if they are going to bring him in, it's in a gadget play. You know, it's in an RPO where he knows what he's doing before the ball's even snapped, and he only has one decision to make, that type of thing, because I don't know if I can say this super confidently, but I'm pretty confident he's the fastest player on the offense.
Oh, right. Wow. Okay. I know that you're saying, so basically if he comes in, they're going to keep it simple on the reads. Yes. And let him use his athletic ability to bridge the gap from what he might not know schematically.
Yeah. Like, I'd be so curious what it would look like in the red zone if in a big game, all of a sudden Damon came out on a 3rd and 12.
Yeah.
You bring him in and he has the choice to run or pass, and that's the sole play. He comes in and he breaks a run for 20 yards. Yeah. You know, like, that is totally in the card. So if it'll be something like that, or something where he only has to make one decision. Otherwise, I think they're going to lean on getting him garbage time touches in 4 games and maintaining his red shirt.
See, I would love to see something like that. Exactly what you just said with him is maybe let him play against a Weber State, let him get some more versus Eastern Michigan. And then you let him just learn and study. And then maybe late in the year in a big game, you know, like you said, great example, 3rd and 12 red zone. Oh, guess what? You haven't prepared for this kid all year. And now all of a sudden, what does the defense have to do? They have to burn a timeout, or they have to go, okay, we got to bring in different personnel. Maybe they bring in like their Zoom package or NASCAR package just to be able to contain a kid with speed like this. So yeah. I think you would absolutely put the freaking defensive coordinator on the opposite team, just to wit's end, trying to figure out what do we need to do to stop this play in a key game. So
yeah.
I really like that idea, because remember, you get him for 2 games in those early games, 2 more during the season, and then maybe, you know, you make a run late and have him for gadget plays as well. So that's kind of exciting and fun.
So you don't see him playing more than the 4 games that a freshman can play with before burning the red shirt?
I don't
see that either.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
He's too valuable, dude. He's too valuable. He's literally probably the future of the team after this year.
If he's the fastest guy on the field, I would love to see a player too that's designed to get the ball in his hands in space and watch him make people miss.
I'm glad you're bringing this up, Mike, because now that we're talking about it, there's probably no way that they don't.
Yeah. He's a weapon. He's somebody that we could actually use.
Yeah. If you see him run, you'll get it. Like, I just don't know. Like, he's so fucking fast and shifty.
So let me ask you this.
He just makes dudes a mess. I don't know.
So if he gets on the field then and he proves to be a real weapon, because like you said, if you're saying he's the fastest guy on the offense, in your opinion, if you have that kind of guy, do you think he could go over those four games because he's that much of a weapon with the ball in his hands? That's a tough thing to say.
His value is rooted in his value is rooted in him being like a surprise, like Noah said. Because mm-hmm. you couldn't just I don't think they want to be in a position where they're having to rely upon him to move the football.
Okay.
Like if they're leaning on him that much, things went left.
Yeah, that's real. That's real.
Yeah, and to what I said earlier too, I think Mike, you said you saw this in the scrimmage. It's like when Will gets going and he's hot, there's no other quarterback you want on the field besides mm-hmm. Will.
Yeah, I
agree. Yeah.
So in turn, like you don't want to have this like dual quarterback, you know, back and forth. Like, okay, this series for you, Damon. This series for Will, back and forth. Like you want to get, ideally, you want to get Will Rogers in, you know, in his groove, let him go. And that to me is the most successful a UW offense can be in 2024 is with a hot Will Rogers.
Yeah, I agree. And I think that both these quarterbacks are very talented, and I think they're going to be okay when it's all said and done. But one of the big things that they have to have if you're going to be a successful quarterback is wide receivers to throw to.
And that, so my friends, is a segue.
It is very much a segue.
That's dialed, brother.
So let's shift our focus now to the wide receiver group, because we had three NFL starters on our roster last year. They all are gone off to bigger and better things. And now we're bringing up the next batch. And we have guys in waiting. I mean, remember last year talking about Denzel Boston, about how he was pushing Rome and all that kind of stuff. And he got to play some, but we didn't get to see him really unleash.
Wanted him playing, Mike. I remember last year. You were like, really play his ass.
Yeah, he was really good. And, but also Jeremiah Hunter.
Yeah, dude.
Looks, I mean, if you've been watching him in the preseason, he's looked phenomenal. Those two definitely look like one and two. And then Giles Jackson, Rasheed Williams. When you're looking at this wide receiver group, who's the number one? Because I think it's hard to really discern between Hunter and Boston right now.
Yeah, that's a great question, man. Because what's interesting is Denzel Boston and Jeremiah Hunter are both big body wide receivers. But I would say their traits are definitely different. I think your Denzel Boston can be a possession type receiver, but I think his elite trait is like get up and beat you over the top mm-hmm. because he can absolutely get up and go, and he can catch the ball. He can catch the ball at his feet, you know, across his body, flip around, one-handed catch like you saw in the scrimmage. I mean, he can do it all. But then you have a Jeremiah Hunter, who, in my opinion, is like the pinpoint pimp at the high level. I mean, he is absolutely, I mean, he'll catch anything and everywhere, but he's a red zone killer. And I think that's the difference between maybe a Denzel and a Jeremiah. Jeremiah's a little bit older, so he knows how to use his body a little bit better. Mm-hmm. But then lastly is your Giles Jackson. You know, looking at him, you know, Shep has told us for years, this guy is mean. He mm-hmm. is a grinder. And it's like, I want to see Giles take that next step. And it wasn't as much as his injury last year that didn't allow him. It's that we had Rome, J-Mac, and Polk. And so those guys were getting all the bread and butter, right? Those guys were getting all the accolades, which they should. But I can't wait to see Giles just take that next step.
That's a real interesting thing to bring up, because I think that if you watch the film of Jed Fish's offense, he's got literally plays that are for a player like Giles Jackson. Now, Izzo, I got a question for you, because he is now the elder statesman in the room mm-hmm. and he's the leader of that wide receiver room, or one of them at least. Does he get 50 catches this year?
I think so. We were joking about this in the offseason once the NCAA video game came out. And we saw from UW football practice clips them running that jet sweep or that jet pass or whatever. And that thing is a cheat code in NCAA football, or whatever you want to call it, EA CFB. And if you count those as catches, the guy's going to have like 100 catches. Because I think they're going to have a lot of gadget plays and behind the screen bubble screen stuff, like behind the line of scrimmage things going on for Giles.
I agree, Izzo. And especially going back to what we said earlier, right? Moving the chains. I think that's one of the big things that the 65-35 split Arizona last year, moving the chains. I know we're going to have better running backs than they had last year, but I just think he is a sure-handed first down machine. And that's kind of what Giles is. He's that possession receiver. He's also that like release valve for Will Rogers. So I think Giles will really give Will Rogers that comfortability. And I think you'll see him. I think you could see a game or two where Giles has like 10 plus catches. And I'm serious.
As we switch to the running backs, this is a position where we have some established guys. Jonah Coleman and Cam Davis, I think they could potentially be a top three in the Big Ten running back duo. They're that good. And Davis hasn't lost a step. I watched him in the spring when he was still kind of ginger, but still looked really quick and fluid. But after watching him in this mock game, he looked really, really strong. And Jonah Coleman looks like a prototypical number one. As we go and look at this running back room, because there's a lot more than just him. Noah, what do you feel? How do you feel about the running back room as it stands right now?
Yeah, I mean, I think this is an easy, you know, name, but like the two-headed monsters, man. I mean, those two guys are bona fide number ones. And then it's nice to have, you know, James Otis Graham at the helm as well, better known as Scotty Graham. I mean, he's an absolute legend. I mean, he's put out some great running backs. But I mean, when you look at, you know, what Jonah Coleman had, you know, his partners in Arizona, you know, in DJ Williams and Michael Wiley, both very good running backs, but neither of them were anywhere close to what Cam Davis is. Ooh. And so what I think about both of them is they're both elite running backs, but they're both willing to do the dirty things. And the dirty things that running backs do is, are they willing to put their nose in there and pass block? Are they willing to pick up that 235-pound blitzing linebacker that you'll see all over the Big Ten? And then the other thing is they can both catch the ball out of the backfield. And here's one thing I want to highlight, especially coming out of this offense. There was two backs last year at Arizona who had 25 plus catches. Both of these guys, one of them was Jonah Coleman, so now he's at UW. But Cam Davis, that was one of his big traits, was his knack for the end zone and catching the ball out of the backfield. So both of these backs fit right into what, you know, your Scotty Grahams and your Jed Fishes are looking for, and they have all the elite traits, you know, you wanted for that stable of running backs.
Yeah. You know, so that's, you know, for the two running backs being as good as they are, it's going to be hard to get touches to both of them all the time. Izzo, like, how do you see the running concept in Jed Fish's offense playing to that advantage of making sure both these horses are fed?
Honestly, what I see happening is literally just keeping both of them. I think they're just going to spell each other. I think it's less defined more than ever because of their skill sets being similar in being one move guys, typically making guys miss in small space versus like your, you know, Salvin Ahmed who breaks out and makes a guy miss in the open field type of thing. These are the types of dudes that throw their shoulders into guys and run between the tackles very well. Both of them, honestly, you can trust on the goal line. Cam Davis especially. There's no, when you watch them, just like Noah's highlighting, both of them are good pass catchers. Both of them, you know, they have just very similar traits. Both of them can block. I just think what they're going to do is be like, hey, who's feeling the best today? All right, you get 51%, the other guy gets 49%. Like, I really just think it's going to be 1A, 1B. And as Noah was talking, I had this epiphany. If you thought that, like, think about Dylan Johnson's production last year. Dylan Johnson was not 100% at all. Like, for what? When did he get hurt? When did he take that foot injury? It was like, maybe week 9, week 10.
It was towards the very end of the season. You're right.
And then that thing was just absolute mush by the time he got to the Pac-12 championship. But like, if that production, that's like, to me, the low end, like of what I expect Cam Davis to be this year. Ooh. Does that make sense? Like in terms of just his ability, like his production as a running back, his ability to make plays, to break out in space. Like I honestly think healthy Cam Davis this year probably would have had arguably a slightly better season than Dylan Johnson last year. Mm. And that's one running back of the two that you got.
So do you see these guys possibly both going for 1,000?
No, just because we're going to pass too much. Maybe total yards because of pass catching. Actually, I would say that might be a hot take right there. That might actually happen. Both of them combine for over 1,000 yards next year, receiving and running. I could see that happening.
Okay, I could see that. Noah, do you see both them guys being on the field at the same time?
Man, you always be putting me on these hot takes. Or
he's asking the questions, dude.
I know. That was a good question.
Though. I love it.
You know, so I'll say it this way. I think you could easily see them, you know, on the field at the same time. And not because just of their skill, but their, like I said, their willingness to maybe do the ugly things or the dirty things. So
the dirty things.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, I try to change that to ugly. You know,
whatever it is, it doesn't matter.
He used naughty last year.
Yeah, the naughty things. But no, I mean, dude, we really have abundance of riches with our running backs, man. And the thing is I'm looking through our notes as we're talking, you know, and we have Jonah, you know, and we have Cam Davis. And it's like, dude, don't sleep on this young freshman, Adam Muhammad, either.
I was literally going to just bring that up.
Dude, bring it up, man, because I'm telling you, you talk about like these freshmen getting four games. Dude, I'll tell you right now, he don't look like a freshman.
That's real. No. Well, and that's what I was going to say is these other guys that we have in the stable, like, do you think the first guy up after the two starters is Muhammad?
It's got to be. Yeah.
God, the thing is, he looks like a dude. No, he does. Yeah. The thing is like kind of what we've been saying, right? It's like
burn the red shirt.
Oh, man.
That would be brutal. Because if you think about it, him, if you're envisioning the future and it's Jordan Washington speed. And then Muhammad and Damon Williams, like, dude, those skill positions are set. Like,
fire, lightning, and ice, baby.
Yeah, it really is. It really is. I just want to make sure you guys are all signed up for the Discord. There's literally a QR code right here. There's a link down in the bio. Our Discord has the best Husky information that you can get outside of talking to Jed Fish himself. You're going to get it's free to join, but if you pay the fee for the VIP, there is nothing better as far as getting recruiting updates, like getting the hot takes on who's going to be the next dog. Also, same thing with coaching. We have access that other people don't have. And as a result, our information comes out at least a week before you hear it on the major news outlets. So make sure you go hit that QR code or hit the link. Join our Discord today. Izzo, let's dive into some of the film that you brought. Like you found some really good stuff online, and it really breaks down this offense that Jed Fish runs. So talk to me.
Yeah. So shout out to Coach Koo on Twitter. He's got 32 years of experience. Been a defensive and recruiting coordinator. He's done some CFB and NFL research analyst stuff. He's got his own Substack. He's at Coach Koo, and that's Coach K-O-U on Twitter. Hit him up. I saw him break down a couple just snippets of game film last year from Jed Fish, and I was like, you know what? I think this is exactly what we need to look at as we look at this offense heading into next freaking week. And we're going to do the same on defense. He's done the same. He's looked at Steve Belichick's defense when he was with the Patriots, and there's some good stuff to glean from that. But I wanted to show you, I had him break down 5-6 clips that kind of dissect what we do on offense. And I'm going to show them to you here. This is a run concept. This is the Arizona duo run game. And again, watch what you're asking of your receivers and tight ends on this clip here.
In the run game, they love to run duo and some other gap schemes. dual is a great play because it allows you to get two double teams at the point of attack while letting your running back hit the hole in a downhill manner. Here's the play right here. It's supposed to be two double teams, but the linebacker walks up, so he ends up taking him. What's different about duo and zone is that duo, the back will start opposite the center. So here's one example of it. Colorado brings the backer, which causes this guard to come off right now. It would be normally a double team, and it starts up inside. And it's a nice play for a nice hole. Now, they run it similar to the LA Rams, right? Because they bring the receiver inside. When there's a nine technique, he blocks out, and he takes the strong safety and run support. It's a nice scheme, nice changeup. They get a nice, do a nice job, and they get a nice gain. Here's another example of their duo run play in the red zone. Again, same type of thing. Back starts opposite. Right? They hit it up inside. They do a nice job. Excellent blocking up front. Again, there's supposed to be two double teams, which should be two here to here. Two double teams, this tackle to the backer, but with pressure. And right? Sometimes, okay, they get it. They get a nice block there. They do an excellent job in the run game. Here it is again. Right, duo. This time the tight end takes him and they just run it up the side with a nice job up front. Last example of duo, Colorado game. Again, they run it with what we call orbit motion. Again, running back starts opposite the center, makes a great cut, and does a great job in the run game. Here it is again. You'll see the center. All right, he's starting and working here. And the center is working in the opposite direction, which makes this, right, a duo type run play. If he was to work in the same direction, push this side, front side, then it'd be considered inside zone. Here it is again, a orbit motion. All right, they do a good job. Running back finds a hole, and they hit it for a huge gain. That's one of their major run plays in their gap run schemes.
So the two things watching those plays that I see is, first off, the ability for pre-snap that you see that Colorado linebacker, he takes one little hesitation step to give away that he's about to blitz, and that guard knows to not duo together, and he ends up picking him up, which is great. But then as it goes, you see the other ones, dude, the scoop blocks where they go double team and scoop up to the linebacker. Dude, like that, I mean, that dude, that's textbook just coaching, man, and being able to get your players to do that. Next thing I want to say is, first play was Jonah Coleman. Second play was DJ Williams. Third play was Jonah Coleman again. What do you notice? What do you notice about both those running backs?
Vision.
Vision, but also you notice north and south running.
Yeah.
They're hitting the hole right off the bat, right from the jump. No dancing in the backfield. Oh, I got to find it. Dude, they are north and south running. Dude, and that goes back. I don't know, man. Dude, that's Scotty Graham to a T. Go look at him at Ohio State. I mean, dude, he is a North and South runner. He's a North and South teacher. And I just love seeing that in those clips.
Yeah. I'll tell you what, the vision on that, though, was what stuck out. The first thing that I saw when I saw that was, man, imagine what Miles Gaskin would have done in that offense. You know what I'm saying? Because he had the best vision of any running back I've seen at UW.
Yeah, man, it's exciting. And I also picked up on you can hide that run play in the three wide receiver sets with one tight end, right? I think one of those clips had two tight ends in them, but they're hiding that in that same set. It's like, dude, if they can run these concepts as their base, they're like what they build everything else around, good luck, man. I'm just saying, if you think that UW is going to go out here and put up 200 yards a game in the Big Ten, okay. Doubt it again. Good luck. It's. I mean, honestly, like,
You go and learn today.
Okay. First of all, also, Coach Koo, you're a friend of Dubbed Up forever, dude. These are awesome, and I appreciate you so much because this is you sending these six clips and highlighting this for us, and the messages you were sending me really kind of opened my eyes as to what exactly this hype was about with this offense, and I hope that's coming across here.
The next route concept is a sail concept. It's a route that isolates this alley defender, and you're looking to run a high-low with him with this bubble action and the deep out. It's a nice route concept. Here they see the alley defender expand. He reads it, and hits the nice deep out concept, which is the sail concept. Here it is from the tight view, right? Quarterback does a good job eluding pressure, hits the route. Here's another example of play action. A motion, he ends up taking pressure, but he would normally go to the flat. Here they are, reading the alley defender. Again, on the deep out, right? Makes a nice completion, a great catch, good ball placement.
I think this is like a play concept where basically what they're doing, like you saw, is they get somebody going high, medium, and short. Yep. It's like essentially flood.
Dude, the two things I noticed, one kind of funny, one just pretty cool. The funny part is, I'm only saying this as a UW fan, did you notice the guy from Arizona State that put the pressure on Fifita?
No.
That was BJ Green. and second, ooh. Second is the concepts that they're running, it's actually very impressive from a fish perspective as well, is that they had enough just wherewithal to teach Fifita and have him understand conceptually, just to read that alley player, that alley defender. And then wherever he goes, that's where the pass isn't going. He's going to hit the next route, you know? Exactly. So it's pretty cool to see Fifita just kind of learn that. And it's now you're kind of getting a little bit of a different player with Will Rogers, obviously not so much speed, but you're getting a lot more experience. So I'm assuming with Jed Fish being an elite play caller, he can probably load Will Rogers with even more concepts, even more things pre-snap, even more things in game that will, I think you might really see Will Rogers take that next step, man. I'm pretty excited about that.
Yeah. I like your point there. Easy read. Three guys on the same side of the field, your head's facing the same direction, and you go high, medium, low.
Yep. I think that was your point, bro.
We're doubling down. We're tripling down points here. Deal. We just freaking agree with each other so hard here.
Dugan.
I guess that is the definition there. We got one more play. This is highlighting basically what we do to play off other plays that we've set up. We've talked about it a couple times on the podcast. You've got these, they run the same looks, same motion from one play to another, but run something else on the out of that same motion look, same set.
One thing you notice about Coach Jed is that he loves to set plays up throughout a game. So one thing you'll see, if they run one concept earlier, whether it be a screen, and then they run a screen and go, or they run their inside run game, and then they run a play action off it. Here's an example. They run a short end concept early in the game, where it's a nice little route concept. They get the short end, and they hit it for a nice gain. And then later in the game, they run the same type of concept where they're going to fake it, and now watch the receiver go back out. They do this constantly with their screen game. They do it with their different things they do throughout the game. He's great at the sequential play call. Even though that's overthrown, it's a great play call.
For my guys, Izzo and Noah, I'm Mike Flaunt, and this is Dubbed Up. And as always, go Dogs.
Go Dogs, baby.